There are reports today that U.S.-led NATO forces in Afghanistan have killed al-Qaeda's second-highest leader in that country in an airstrike. The U.S. military likely behind that strike, winding down a war in that country. But according to a report in today's New York Times, it's President Obama who signs off on every strike in Yemen, Somalia, and also the more complex and risky strikes in Pakistan. The Times reports that the president has placed himself at the helm of a top-secret nominations process, a grim debating society that vets suspects using PowerPoint slides with names and life stories of suspected al-Qaeda members, designating which should be killed or captured, and it's rarely the latter, the president insisting that he approve every name. The Times reports that this is unprecedented in presidential history, a president personally overseeing an obvious but still secretive shadow war, this one with al-Qaeda, a role that baffles many of President Obama's supporters and critics. Scott Shane reported this lengthy story. He joins us from his office in Washington. Scott, welcome.
Hi, Robin.
And of course, we don't know whether or not the president personally signed off on the strike that we're reading about in Afghanistan. But tell us about these PowerPoint presentations, this nominating process that you've reported on.
Yeah, it's really kind of fascinating and a little bit macabre to learn about. There are two parallel processes. One takes place at the CIA, mostly focuses on Pakistan, and is quite cloaked in secrecy, pretty much stays within the bounds of CIA. The other is run by the Pentagon, and it actually goes, it's a much more open process. It goes to a video conference of sometimes over 100 officials in all the different intelligence and security and counterterrorism agencies. And they literally, you know, put up a slide of a suspected member of al-Qaeda. Somebody presents his bio, what they think he's done. And there is sometimes a fairly vigorous debate over whether he qualifies to go on the capture or kill list. And in the last 3 years, there's only been one person captured, so generally speaking, it is the kill list.
Well, tell us more, take us a little more inside these meetings. You've talked to sources. First of all, you talk about heated debates. Over what?
The requirements are that the person involved pose a threat to the United States, or in some cases to Americans in a country like Pakistan or Yemen, to the embassies, for example. So the question is, how do you actually know? This is usually based on secret intelligence. How do you know that this guy is a member of al-Qaeda? How do you know what makes you think he poses a threat? And sometimes, you know, one agency will step up and say, you know what, this guy doesn't really sound like he qualifies.
Well, you report on one exchange where someone says, well, what's an al-Qaeda facilitator? Is a guy who opens a gate for a truck a facilitator or just a guy opening a gate?
Exactly. And you can imagine that since you're relying on informants within these terror networks or surveillance from drones, that there's imperfect knowledge of who these people are and what they're up to. So in some ways, it's reassuring if the country's going to take these kinds of steps that there is this kind of vetting process that takes place.
And when does it get to the president? And then what is he like in his meetings?
He presides at a meeting that has come to be called Terror Tuesday, which is in the Situation Room at the White House and involves usually a couple dozen top security and counterterrorism officials, including cabinet members. And a name will come to them, and he will, with the advice of John Brennan, his counterterrorism advisor, make a final decision as to who goes on the list and who stays off.
And you described someone who's pretty heated about this, forces people to make their case, really is in charge. With John Brennan at his side, John Brennan was highly criticized during the Bush administration for that administration's interrogation techniques, longtime CIA official. But now one source you spoke with says it's as if a priest has been put in charge of the war. That's how this source saw, you know, sort of his moral standing. Tell us just a little bit more about who John Brennan is at the president's side.
Yeah, he emerges as one of the more fascinating characters at the White House. He, as you say, he was vilified by folks on the left at the time that Obama was elected, and their outcry against him as a CIA veteran who had served at the CIA in a senior level during the Bush administration actually prevented Obama from appointing him CIA director, which was the initial intent. And he has always said that he was somewhat critical of some of what the CIA was doing under Bush, especially the brutal interrogation practices that were used then. What's striking when you talk to people now is that a number of the people who are sort of civil libertarians have come to take at least a much more nuanced and often a quite positive view of John Brennan. He has been a fairly staunch advocate for closing Guantanamo, even though they haven't made much progress toward that goal. And he also has impressed a lot of his colleagues as taking this process of overseeing lethal operations with a great deal of moral seriousness.
So at President Obama's shoulder, though, when he's actually the one, you know, as you detail it, he's in charge here. What's happened here? Why is President Obama embracing drones?
Well, he came into office, as folks will remember, promising to withdraw from Iraq. He's withdrawn from Iraq. He's in the process of withdrawing from Afghanistan. And his theory has always been, don't take 100,000 American troops into a country which results in a lot of American deaths and a huge number of deaths of local civilians, but use this sort of pinpoint method of finding the terrorists, the people who really want to kill Americans, and picking them off. Even as he's been on the sort of peace side of the equation in terms of the big wars, he's been extremely aggressive in going after al-Qaeda, both in Pakistan and Yemen.
You say this is where President Obama reveals himself as a realist, not the ideologue that his critics think he is, or the softy that his critics think he is, or the idealist that his supporters think he is.
Yeah, it's really, you know, he's sort of frustrated the expectations of people on various points of the political spectrum. Everything we learned about him points to a kind of case-by-case pragmatist who uses his legal skills often not to block counterterrorism, aggressive counterterrorism operations, but really to enable them.
Well, you say he uses his legal skills. Some would say he skirts his own language. He skirts his own rules. You give a case in point. Pakistan wanted the U.S. to strike against Batula Masood. This is the leader of the Pakistan Taliban. But that strike would not have fit the rules that the president himself set down, so he found a way around them.
Well, I think they would say that that's exactly an example of that kind of case-by-case pragmatic thinking. This guy was very dangerous to the Pakistani government, which would not usually qualify him for the U.S. kill list, because he wasn't usually targeting Americans. But they found that he had plotted to kill Americans and attack the U.S. embassy in Pakistan, and that was enough to put him on the list and kind of get the job done.
Because the U.S. needed Pakistan to approve future strikes. That's Scott Shane of the New York Times. He describes President Obama as a student of the just war writings of Augustine and Thomas Aquinas, trying to apply that thinking to drone strikes. We're going to hear more from Scott in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back to our conversation with Scott Shane of the New York Times. His piece today details how the Obama administration decides which suspected terrorists to target in drone attacks. Sources in the White House telling Scott that President Obama plays an unprecedented role, poring over pictures in the so-called Tuesday terror meeting, asking how old some young-looking suspects are, grilling officials on their reasons for drone strikes before approving them. And Scott, you were just saying that sometimes the president uses his own skills as a lawyer to give himself wiggle room around his own rules, but that he has vowed to wage this drone fight with American values, and that he and John Brennan, his counterterrorism advisor, aim to apply just war theories to what are, you know, deadly strikes.
Yeah, it's kind of a remarkable thing, and I think maybe the most remarkable thing is the hands-on role that the President of the United States, who, when you think about it, historically they tend to delegate out of necessity almost everything, he has very, very deliberately and thoughtfully chosen to put himself in charge of this process.
Well, there's been a lot of pushback from within the White House. You talk about Hillary Clinton and others who thought that this concentration on drone strikes was overlooking some sort of policy about getting at the root of insurgencies and the attraction of al-Qaeda. Republican critics saying this is a way of end-running Guantanamo Bay, killing detainees rather than capturing them.
Yeah, one of the things that you see in looking at Obama's first term is that presidents have a lot of power, but if he says close Guantanamo Bay, that turns out to be an enormously complicated task with a lot of toxic politics. The Republicans passed things to block it, and he just didn't get the job done. Whereas if he tells the CIA or the Pentagon, kill this terrorist, that is pretty straightforward, and the job tends to get done.
Well, but it also helps him skirt a lot of questions. No messy trials, no rendition to other countries, no questions, as we said, about Guantanamo Bay. What have been some of the other criticisms of President Obama's reliance on drones?
I think the big one is, what are the long-term consequences of this policy? There was sort of a what you might think of as a warning shot from Faisal Shahzad, who was the man who was arrested and sentenced to life in prison after trying to blow up a car at Times Square in 2010. Mm-hmm. When he pleaded guilty, Shahzad said essentially that he'd done it because of the drone strikes. And so Obama campaigned against Guantanamo, saying that it was a recruiting tool for al-Qaeda. But certainly by now, the drones themselves have become a recruiting tool for al-Qaeda. So the question that sort of hovers over this program is, it's killing a lot of terrorists. It has eviscerated al-Qaeda by almost every account. But is it inadvertently creating the next generation of al-Qaeda or of terrorism?
The president has also been accused of using a disputed method for counting civilian casualties. This is, counting the bodies of young males as militants, when in fact they might have been innocent civilians. But how has the president reacted to civilian deaths? We know that there were in strikes in Pakistan and Yemen, things went terribly wrong. In Yemen, whole families were killed in a strike on a target. How did the president respond to that?
Well, by all accounts, the president has repeatedly pressed the CIA and the Pentagon to take steps to minimize the deaths of civilians.
Is this in part why he has gotten so involved?
Yes. It is apparently one of the reasons that he has taken such personal control, is that he kind of feels morally responsible for these strikes and wants to make sure they're done right. We were told that based in part on his pressing, the CIA downsized the munitions that it puts in its Hellfire missiles that are fired from drones to make it less likely that if they hit one house, they'll kill somebody accidentally at the neighboring house. And he also tightened the standards so that if there's any significant chance of civilian deaths, he kind of wants the strike plan brought to him beforehand so that he can essentially sign off on it or not, depending on what the risks are.
You say another question is, how much killing will be enough? When do you stop? But on the other hand, this reveals a President Obama who is much tougher, much more aggressive in the war on, insurgents than those on the right would have him be.
Well, actually, the Republicans have given him fairly high marks for this program of killing terrorists. It's striking that Mitt Romney has not mentioned terrorism and counterterrorism much on the campaign trail. In an unusual way for a Democrat, he has sort of removed that aspect, at least, of national security from the political playing board. But at the same time, some Republicans we talked to were critical that the Obama administration seems to have essentially eliminated taking people into custody, wanting to avoid all the complications of where do you keep suspected terrorists who you catch? Do you try them through military commissions? Do you try them through regular courts? Does putting them on trial give them a soapbox from which they can radicalize others? Obviously, all those questions are answered in a very simple way if the suspected terrorist is just killed with a missile.
Well, there is one other question. You spoke with Mike Hayden, former CIA director and now an advisor to Mitt Romney, who does say that there is sort of a Nixon to China quality about this. But a question could be, if a program rests on the president, the personal legitimacy of the president, that's not sustainable. Because does that mean the next president is the one who, signs off on drone strikes if there is, a change? There's ultimately going to be a change in command at some point. So it's sort of setting the precedent that the president is running an attack program.
Yeah, there were a number of people who suggested that the time has come for this lethal program to come out into the open. And Mike Hayden, the former CIA director, was certainly one of them. He said that he had operated on the basis of secret legal opinions from the Justice Department, and it wasn't a good way under the Bush administration. And he said it wasn't a good way to operate. So he was essentially applying the experience he'd had under Bush to Obama and saying that they really need to have far more transparency for this program for it to be politically sustainable in the long run.
That's Scott Shane, a reporter for the New York Times. We'll link you to his lengthy report in today's paper at hereandnow.org. Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we heard a lot. Your thoughts. Are you disappointed in President Obama's use of drones? Are you surprised by it if you thought maybe he was soft on terror? So many possible thoughts. Let us know yours at hereandnow.org. Latest news is next. Here and Now.